I could have everyone's attention, please. The name of this session is Leading an Effective Client Service Training Meeting. The session number is 22618, and I'd like to introduce our speaker for this session, Tracy Doughty.
Okay, so we finally got our last session. This will be my eighth session for the last 2 days, so bear with me. I'm losing my voice just a little bit, so... We have spent all day talking about the importance of having a clear, defined vision with your healthcare team. Many times when I go into practices and I do confidential interviews, one of the questions I ask the team members, does this practice have a clear, defined vision that is shared by the entire healthcare team? And I would say almost always the healthcare team member says, no, we do not have a vision that we share and are committed with. And when I talk about a vision, I'm not talking about a fancy mission statement that we're going to mat and frame in the reception area about our high-quality medicine and our excellent client service. But I'm talking about setting some goals about our future state, what we're going to look like in the next 12 to 24 months, and developing some statements that we can put our arms around and that we can be committed to, and we can get our team excited about doing more than just coming to work and doing the mundane tasks that they have to do on a daily basis. When people feel like they're being part of something bigger than themselves and they're meeting their self-actualization in their work, they're going to be motivated and inspired to give 100% every single day. But many times we do the planning and we set goals and we come up with wonderful ideas that we want to implement in the practice, but we don't take the time to implement those things, and it requires spending time working on your practice versus in your practice. And so I've talked a lot about the importance of dedicating 2 to 3 hours a week working on your practice. Those of you who have not heard me speak earlier, I am a daughter of a veterinarian, and I managed my father's practice for several years back in the mid-90s. Before that, I worked in the personnel industry, and I did recruiting and worked with Fortune 500 companies. And when I started consulting back in the late 90s, I called my dad after a couple of years of consulting, and I said, I've come to the realization that weekly meetings are just an extremely powerful tool to get your team motivated, inspired. It opens up the lines of communication. It allows you to hold your team accountable. And I said, you know, your team will be very motivated. And I said, you will improve the morale and culture of your team if you just spend time working on your practice together. And he said, Tracy, there is no way I'm going to close down my practice every week for a meeting. There's no way. We are too busy. We have too much going on. It's just not going to happen. And I said, okay, well, let me ask you a question, Dad. I said, how many hours a week is your practice open? So he counted, and he said, about 65 hours. And I said, so what you're telling me is that you can't commit 2 to 3 hours a week working on your practice when you're open 65 hours a week? And he said, well, I see your point, but what are we going to talk about for 2 to 3 hours every single week? What could we possibly go over? That just seems like an enormous amount of time to have a meeting. And I told him, I said, trust me, I will give you an agenda, a structured agenda that your team members will enjoy coming to these weekly meetings. And I said, and they'll be inspired. And I said, you will not lose income. I said, you will grow in income because you're going to share your knowledge with them. You're going to set standards that everyone's going to be trained to. And you're going to inspire your team members to do more and be more productive. And so they implemented. He goes, well, that's fine, but I'm only going to do it 2 hours. And, you know, within 6 months, he increased it to 3 because they ran out of time. They couldn't get everything accomplished that they wanted to get accomplished in that 2-hour time period. So let's talk about how you could have these weekly meetings so that they're effective. And, you know, the whole focus is on serving the clients because we do not spend enough time with our healthcare team and helping them understand that we are in the business of serving our clients. We are a client patient-centered practice, and we need to have time set aside on a weekly basis to rejuvenate the culture of client service. So when do you train? Well, again, like I said, I think they should be done weekly. I think that it really just depends on what works best for your practice. You know, some people do, some of my clients do it on the slowest day of the week. Some of my clients do it when everyone is there. You know, there's one day a week typically when the majority of your healthcare team are on that day, and your doctors, that might be the day you want to have that meeting. So you have to determine when it works best for you. But if you create the vision first and you get your team committed to the vision, then they're going to be more likely to buy into the fact that they're going to have to come in for a weekly meeting. I think the practice should stay closed. You just close it for a couple of hours. Your clients are not going to get upset over this. They're going to understand. You know, it's just a matter of communicating effectively to them what you're doing and why you're doing it. And so many of my clients, they have a sign, a permanent professional sign that they post outside of their facility that states their hours of operation. And then it also states, you know, from 12 to 3 on Thursdays, we are closed for a client service meeting to better serve our clients and patients. And then you give them possibly a medical emergency number in case, you know, let's say you're having your meeting and, you know, a client has a real medical emergency, they have a way of contacting you. And if you have an emergency, you stop the meeting, or maybe there's a subset of people that go and handle that emergency, and the rest of you continue with your meeting, just dependent upon how big of a team you have. But I think it's training your client care specialists to communicate with clients the day of the meeting. You know, clients that are coming in for pet food or coming in for refill medications that might be coming in to pick up orders, just to tell that client, now, Mrs. Jones, just want to remind you, today we are going to be closed from 12 to 3 for our client service meeting, so I want to make sure that you don't come up here when we're having our meeting, because we will have our doors closed. So make sure you come in either before or after our meeting to pick up your medication or your food. And it's just a training issue with your staff and not upsetting your clients during this one day a week that you're going to be closed. I have some practices that say, well, can we rotate the days so that everyone can attend the meetings because of the different schedules and things like that? And I think that's inconsistent for your clients. I think it needs to be the same day every week. So that there's some consistency in what you're providing for your clients. I think everyone should attend the meeting. Everyone comes. One of the things I hear over and over in the interviews that I do with my clients, the confidential interviews, is we have departmental division. We got the front against the back. The kennel staff feel ignored. The doctors are disconnected from, you know, some of the team members. And then I go into some practices and they have doctors meetings, and then they have receptionist meetings, and they have technician meetings and kennel meetings. But what happens when you do that is that there's a lot of information that's going on in those individual meetings that does not get disseminated to everybody on the team. I mean, what is it that doctors talk about in these doctor meetings that everybody could not hear? I mean, surely everyone could learn from the doctors when they're talking about medicine and their protocols and things like that. And I think when you have receptionist issues going on in your practice and it's discussed at large with everyone on the team, people start to understand and identify how everything connects together to serving the clients and the patients. And now all of a sudden we become one team with one purpose, and that's to serve our clients, to provide medical care to our patients, and we all play a role in the delivery of health care. And so when you have a meeting as an entire healthcare team and it's inclusive, it eliminates gossip, it eliminates misperceptions, it opens up the lines of communication tremendously in all of the areas in your practice. So everybody needs to be present. One person asked me about groomers, because a lot of groomers, you know, I don't know, how many of you have groomers on your team? Okay, quite a few of you, so this is might be a pertinent point for you guys. Many times groomers are paid on commission, so they get a percentage of what they produce. And so that's one part of it. Well, I think they should come to the meetings, number one. I think groomers should not groom, and they should come to the meetings. And so they need to get paid an hourly rate for that. Okay, maybe $10 an hour, or, you know, whatever you come up with that would be a fair, reasonable hourly rate for them to be in the meeting. Second reason why I think they need to be in the meeting is because they need to be part of the medical healthcare team. You know, your A clients are the ones who are getting their pets groomed. And they need to know what our standards are in the hospital. They need to know how to communicate with clients. They need to know what the patient care is. So that, you know, because really, grooming doesn't generate a profit for the practice. It's the ancillary services that are rendered in addition to that when that pet comes in for grooming. It's the wellness services. It's the lumps and the bumps and the ears and the skin problems that the groomer finds when they're grooming that pet. And so they need to be involved in all of the information that's being disseminated in these meetings so that they can help the practice be profitable as well. And I find a lot of times groomers kind of get isolated in their own little area, and they feel like they're their own boss because they get paid on a percentage, and they feel like they're not, you know, subject to any of the rules and policies and things within the practice, and the relationship becomes crossways with the staff and the owner. You can eliminate so many headaches if you make sure that groomer is involved with the team. I think everyone obviously should be paid for the meeting and should get paid. I hear a lot of people ask me, well, can't you have the meeting before the clinic opens or after the clinic closes or on a weekend day? No. Don't take time away from people's personal life. You know, we need work-life balance. Everybody needs work-life balance. I think that something that most Americans struggle with is work-life balance. And the last thing we need to do is put a meeting on our team members outside of their normal working hours. We've got to dedicate that time during normal hospital operational hours, and so that they see that it is important that they be part of these meetings. I think you need to have rules of the meeting, meeting do's and meeting don'ts, so everyone knows what the expectation is when they come into the meeting and how they're supposed to conduct themselves. Meeting do's, headline your thoughts, manage your listening, build on others' ideas, use the how-to or I wish I knew phrase. Stay in the process. No idea is a bad idea. Stay in with the time allotted for each agenda item. Don't look for the fatal flaw in every idea. Don't lob grenades at your coworkers. Don't ramble or persist on a hidden agenda. Don't have more than one meeting at a time. And don't miss time within the agenda items. But just, you know, you can create your own rules just based on the culture of your team and things that things you might see happen, like we want everyone to participate, for example, because sometimes you'll have some people that are just, you know, they hate change, they don't like this, they don't even want to be here, and so they just cross their arms, put their head down, and they don't participate. Maybe one of your meeting rules is that everyone participates and gives feedback and suggestions. And so you're able to have that as part of your meeting rules. I think it's important to have an effective facilitator. And this doesn't have to be the practice owner. It doesn't have to be the practice manager. The practice manager can be the lead by example and initially become the facilitator, but then delegate it and let other people on the team be a facilitator. And I actually have a facilitator job description that I'll read to you, because I think it's important that if people want to sign up and say, oh, I'll be a facilitator, they need to know that there's certain rules and roles that they need to be able to handle in order to be an effective facilitator. Because you do need to have some leadership skills to be able to facilitate a meeting, but you're not necessarily doing all the talking or running the meeting. You're just facilitating the meeting, making sure that it's running smoothly. And here's the job description of a meeting facilitator. No, it is not. It's not in the meeting. Yeah, you can email me. I'll send this to you. I'd be happy to. Team facilitators will be responsible for leading the team through the agenda. The facilitators are expected to have strong team leadership and group processes skills. These include soliciting participation from all team members, keeping the team on task, helping the team to synthesize individual responses into a collective response, shifting conversations away from unproductive tangents back on the main topic. So people who like to chase rabbits and go off on, you know, other topics, the facilitator would say, you know what, that's a great thing to talk about, but we're going to put that on next week's agenda. Keep the team focused on the creation of the final product, the ability to listen, summarize, and reframe, ask questions to stimulate thinking, summarize discussions for team agreement and decisions. The facilitator will work in partnership with the secretary, who will be capturing the key points from each of the discussions for meeting notes. So this person needs to have some assertiveness, Is it going to be shy to cut someone off? They need to be diplomatic. They need to have some discernment when people are not participating and say, I noticed you haven't said anything. What's your opinion? What do you think? And actually, you know, because sometimes you have, everyone has different personality styles. You've got the talkers who like to talk, and they're going to dominate the meeting. And then you've got the other people who analyze, and they like to listen, and they're processing, and they're thinking through things, and maybe they may not jump out and give their opinion. And so the facilitator needs to be able to hone in on that and get full participation from the whole team. You also need to have a secretary for your meeting, somebody who takes meeting notes. And I think it's important that in order to have effective follow-through and accountability, you need to have someone taking notes of pertinent discussions and decisions that we're making in these meetings. And it can be a rotating position, you know, someone can be the secretary for a month, and then the next month someone else signs up for it. When you start delegating these types of roles to your team members, they start feeling more valuable on the team. So this creates some leadership skills within them because they're taking on a responsibility in addition to their normal job description. And people like to do that. So here's the purpose of having meeting notes. One, you want the team members who are absent from the meeting to be able to be in the know of what we discussed. So those part-time students that, you know, clean kennels, or maybe someone was out sick or, you know, wasn't able to attend the meeting, they're able to get a copy of what was discussed, decisions that were made, and they're in the loop of what's going on in the practice. Also, the secretary will bring those notes back next week, and they're going to go through them and make sure that we did what we said we were going to do. We don't just talk about things in this practice. We actually implement them. If we don't implement them, we're going to talk about why we didn't implement it. So it's like an accountability tool that we know that we talked about this, that we created a timeline, and we're going to make sure that we followed through on our timelines. And a copy is given to all of the team members. There's never any discrepancy on whether or not they got the information, because it was discussed and they got a copy of the meeting notes. So they never have to say, well, I didn't know about that new policy change. Oh, yes, you did, because you were in the meeting and you got a copy of the meeting notes. Also, I have my practices keep it in a binder, so if you forget what we decided we were going to do, we can go back and look and refer back and say, here it is. This is how we said we were going to do it, and there's no discrepancy. And then I recommend having a consistent structure in your agenda every week. So the facilitator or someone in the team needs to print out an agenda, and it's handed to everyone every single week. And one of the things I also recommend doing is if you develop some core values and vision statements, put those at the top of your agenda. You know, what are we working towards? That way everyone sees the vision statements. Everyone sees where we're going as a practice and as a team. And so when we're making decisions and we're talking about things, people can refer back to where we're going in the future, and does it funnel up? Does this change, or does this decision, or does this policy, or does this standard funnel up to what our vision is? And if the answer is yes, well, then we need to be doing that change or that new policy. How detailed? It doesn't have to be real detailed. I'm going to give you some examples here as we go through each agenda item. Okay, so the first agenda item is housekeeping. So you'd have number one, housekeeping, and then you'd have some bullet points underneath it. And the bullet points would be things that people write on the clipboard. I recommend having a clipboard or some place where people can write things that happen throughout the week that are related to hospital operations. So anybody on the team can go to that clipboard and they can write an item down that needs to be addressed with the staff, but they need to put their name beside it. This is not an anonymous gripe board, okay? They need to put the item down, put their name beside it, and then they need to come prepared to present that item and also give at least one solution to solve it. So the facilitator would say, okay, we've got housekeeping. Our first one on housekeeping is staff schedules. Susie, what do you have to tell us about staff schedules? And Susie's going to share of the item, and she's going to give her suggestion, and we're going to discuss it. So that would be what we go under housekeeping. And that's about a 30-minute agenda item. I think it's good to time these because you could spend 2 hours talking about housekeeping. So you want to keep it short, and you want to keep it sweet, and you want to be able to get through everything you want to get through in your meeting. The next agenda item is an introduction of new team members. This is just maybe a 10-minute agenda item, and this may not be on your agenda every week. It's just based on if you have new team members that have joined your team that week. I think we do not always do a good job of integrating new team members into our culture and make them feel warm and welcome with our team. And this is a great way for that new team member to start to feel a sense of pride of being part of your practice. So everyone on the team introduces themselves, tells them their position, how long they've been in the practice, and something that they think is unique about your practice. And so that new team member is starting to feel a sense of pride of being part of your team. The next agenda item is obituaries, and one person is assigned every week to bring all of the medical records of the animals that died in your practice over the last 7 days. And this is kind of a threefold purpose. One, we're going to have the doctors that were involved in the cases talk about the issues related to the death of that pet. So we're going to learn how these veterinarians practice medicine, what tests they ran, what conversations they had with the client. We start learning about disease progression, diagnostics that are ran, prognosis. We start learning all of the things that are associated with that case and what went on in that case. And everyone that was involved in dealing with that client's grief, maybe it was an animal that needed to be euthanized, and we talk about that. We start learning about how we service our clients in those difficult times. And also, we can send around sympathy cards around the room so everyone can sign the sympathy card. And it just creates a little more added touch when everyone has signed it and maybe wrote a special note to that particular client because they knew that pet really well. The next agenda item is called client service share time. This is about a 25, 30-minute agenda item also. And I would say this is probably one of the most important parts of the meeting. This is where you're going to hold people accountable to your standards. If you're going to be a client-patient-centered practice, you need to have your ears to the ground listening to what your clients are saying about your practice. What experiences are they having in your hospital? And so every team member is required to bring an incident of either exceptional service that happened in your practice that week or poor service that happened in your practice that week. And they're going to share what happened. So we all learn how our clients are being treated in our hospital. So if it's a positive incident, then we're going to have an opportunity to praise and recognize that employee or those group of employees that were involved in that and tell them, way to go, atta girl, atta boy, and give them some kudos for doing an exceptional job and for upholding our standards. If it's a negative incident, we're not going to make that person that shared or those people that shared that negative, there's not going to be any negative repercussions for that mistake that was made or that bad or that poor service that was as a result of that incident. But we are going to talk about, in a positive way, how can we make sure this does not happen again? What systems or standards or policies or procedures do we need to put in place to prevent this from happening in the future? And what I have found is sometimes people don't want to share the negative. They'll do everything they can. I was in a practice that I consulted for 6 months in my hometown, and I was there every week in their weekly meetings. And every week it was the same thing, positive, 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 positive. Every week we'd go around, and I said, surely something negative has happened in this practice, surely. And they're like, no, everything's been great. We're perfect. And so what has to happen, you as leaders and as managers, because you're typically in the know, you know when bad things happen in your practice. You hear about it, even if you weren't intimately involved in it. So you need to say, now, did something happen with Mrs. Jones on Thursday? And you need to say who was involved, who dealt with Mrs. Jones, who was, you know, because how many people typically deal with one client on average? At least 3 or 4 or 5, right? You've got the client care specialist at the front desk. You've got the technicians and assistants. You've got the doctors. So you actually go through that entire client transaction. Okay, so who checked Mrs. Jones in? Oh, that was me. Okay, Brandy, tell us about that. What happened? So she goes through the whole scenario. Okay, and then who got her next? Oh, that was me. Okay, Jill, tell us what happened when she came into the exam room. And we go through the entire client transaction. And so we have to talk about it. We have to talk about the stuff that doesn't go right in our hospital. But we're not going to tell anybody that they did a poor job or that they screwed up or that they're stupid or anything like that. We're just going to say, okay, what could we have done differently to make sure that doesn't happen again? And hopefully your team members, if there was a real screw up and one of your team members did it, hopefully they're going to own up to it and say, you know what, I need to make sure that I do things right next time. Or maybe your other team members may say, well, we need to pick up the ball and carry it if one of our team members accidentally drops it. But we learn how to implement things in our practice so that those negative incidences do not happen in the future. But what this also does is it starts to hold people accountable because they know that during client service share time, incidences are going to be shared. And so people are starting to think, wow, there's some accountability here. You know, if I don't provide good service and if I don't uphold the standards, it might come up in a weekly meeting. And people start to get uncomfortable when their name gets mentioned every single time a negative incident gets brought up in a weekly meeting, right? So they have two choices. They're either going to step up to the plate and improve performance or they're going to self-eject. And that's what we want. Right? Because many times we put all these wonderful things in place and then I hear managers say, well, my employees are not complying with what I've trained them to do. And a lot of times it's because we don't hold them accountable. And sometimes holding people accountable is uncomfortable, but it's our job as managers and as leaders to hold our team accountable. It's not personal, it's business, and that's what we're supposed to do. So staff members are taught how to listen to clients, to gather important client information, and they're taught how to act on that information to change. And that's what client service share time is about. Now, if you've got a huge healthcare team, not everyone may be able to have time to share an incident. But you want everyone to be prepared, and you might even have to call on people. Just, you know, at random, to make sure that they are coming prepared with an incident. And then the last hour of the meeting is training. And if you don't have standards set in your practice, I think I would use this hour to start setting standards in your practice. And I would start with the very basic bread and butter topics in practice. I would start with wellness. Let's set wellness standards first. Diagnostic standards. Therapeutic standards. Surgical standards. Anesthetic standards. Client service standards. Communication standards. But once you get everyone trained to the standards, which may take a year, maybe a year and a half, and all of your core people are trained to the standards, then you might have outside standards training for new employees. So the weekly meetings now become just a rejuvenation of just complementing the standards. And you can bring, buy a library of client service books, and have staff members assigned to bring one topic related to client service. We've done things, simple, basic things that don't take a lot of time and preparation, like reading one chapter of Client Service for Dummies a week, reading it out loud to the team. Or how many of you have heard of the book Phish? Phish is an excellent client service book. You know, pulling little excerpts out of that. There's all different types of, you know, you can get on Amazon.com or go to Barnes & Noble or some of the, big bookstores, and you can go into the management and business section. You can find some excellent books on customer service, and you can have a library of books, and then people can sign up, and they can present a 20- or 30-minute training session on client service. It might be on body language. It might be on how to deal with a distraught or angry client. It might be how to use words of professionalism. But they come in and you're starting to elevate your team members. You're getting them to get up in front of everyone and speak publicly, and that's going to help them with their communication skills when they talk to clients. So you can do it different ways. You can do like 30 minutes of client service training and then do 30 minutes of medical training. So you have another staff member or a doctor who presents a topic on medicine. And again, like I said, you want to start with the bread and butter topics of practice. Vaccines, physical exam, nutrition, diet, parasite control, heartworm disease, prevention, fleas and control, dermatology, ears, teeth, puppy kitten care, and restraint. And you can get more and more advanced as each month goes on. You know, once you get finished with the pillars of your practice, the foundations of your practice, then you can start training your team more. The more you share your knowledge, veterinarians share their knowledge with their healthcare teams, the more they can step back and not be so intimately involved in every single detail that goes on in their practices. And I think, you know, I was talking to a veterinarian earlier today who said that, you know, he likes being able to step back from his practice. He has other doctors that work there. But as an owner, he doesn't have to be there, you know, 40, 50 hours a week for it to operate and run and be successful. And so you want to be able to surround yourself with knowledgeable, professional people who have some leadership skills that can solve problems, solve our clients' problems, solve their own problems. And the more knowledge that you can give them related to client service, leadership training, and medical training, the better. So you'll never run out of topics to train your healthcare team on, because our profession is constantly changing and adding, new advances in technology and medicine. I mean, there's always things that you can talk to your team about, but you want to start with the basics. Let's get the basics down where everyone understands what we do, why we do it, how to market it and educate clients about it, how we charge for it. And I believe that you should test them as well. Have typewritten notes. There's wonderful tools out there that you can utilize. LifeLearn has excellent tools. I'm sure AHA has some great tools for medical training. But you want to have an explanation from the doctor or a key staff member. Why are we learning this? How do we market it? And I believe in testing. Let's put our money where our mouth is. Not just, yes, I know it. Let's get tested on it. We not only want to test them on what they know, but actually test them on how they communicate it with clients. How would they market this? I'm a big believer in role-playing. Role-playing sometimes gets the team all in open arms, and, you know, they freak out when I come into practice and say, we're going to do role-playing. They get all nervous because they have to get up in front of their peers and act out what they're going to say to clients. But you know, the reality is, that's what they're doing all day long, is presenting themselves. They're representing the owner of the practice. They're representing the practice as a whole. They're representing the team at large. Why would we not have some type of role-playing training on an ongoing basis to see what people are saying to clients? And I think if you do it in a format where, you know, where you kind of ease them into it, they'll get more and more comfortable with it. And some of the things I've done is, you know, I'll break groups. If you are having trouble with your team members participating and wanting to speak out, break them into groups. That has really helped me. I say, okay, I want you to find a partner and break up into groups of two or three people. And then I each give them a task to do. And then one person from each group reports out. And sometimes you can get better participation that way when you break people into groups. But role playing, for example, you know, you give break them into groups of two people, give them a role play scenario, something simple and basic like, Mrs. Jones calls in, she got a new kitten, she found it at the park, she's going to keep it, and she wants to know how much it's going to cost to get its vaccinations. What do you say to her? Okay? So that's one scenario. Next one is, Mrs. Smith walks in and wants to get her dog's teeth cleaned. What do you say to her? So, I mean, it's very simple, basic things. You know, Mrs. Jones calls on the phone and wants to get some vaccinations for her adult dog and hasn't been to a vet in the last 2 years. What do you say to her? So, you know, just simple, basic, routine scenarios that we see over and over and over again. And you break them into groups and you say, okay, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to talk about it amongst yourselves on what you're going to say to the client, and then we're each going to go over each scenario. So you do that and you critique it, and everyone shares what, you know, what, how they did, what they could have done better, how they may have said it differently. And then next week we're going to do role playing again, and this time we're not going to break up in groups. We're just, each person's going to get their own scenario, but they're going to get a few minutes to think about what they're going to say, take notes, and then we're going to go around the room and everyone's going to share what they would say to client, to the client. And then the next week we're going to come back, we're going to do more role playing, but this time we're not going to give them 5 minutes to prepare. We're just going to do it right on the spot. What would you say when, if this client called on the phone, or if this client walked into an exam room or walked to the front desk? And that way you're able to get people to and understand that, you know, we don't want to put people in the spot and make them feel stupid, but they do need to know how to present our services. And this is a great time to do that. Yes. She said, how do you do this with people like your kennel staff who have never been introduced to this information? You don't want to do role-playing tomorrow. You want to give them the information they need, start setting your standards, training them the standards, and then once you've got the standards instituted, then you do role-playing. It's almost like a, you know, okay, let's just follow this up and make sure you understand this is how we present it to clients. I have some clients that, you know, they create over 15 standards tests. And so when new employees are brought on into the practice, they tell the employee, okay, we have standards here in our hospital, and you're going to be required to take some, you're going to learn our standards, and you're going to be tested on our standards. And if you make a 90% or above on your test, you have the opportunity to make a 25-cent raise for each test you get a 90% or above on. So right now we're going to start you out at $8 an hour, but you have the potential of making a 25-cent raise every time you take one of those tests, up to 15 tests. So you can add that up. And so the bottom line is performance equals pay. The more knowledge you have and the more you're able to contribute to our practice team and educate our clients, the more value you have to our practice. Someone raised their hand. I think that she said we train our kennel staff to be veterinary assistants, and I think that's right on. I think that, you know, they need to be able to identify problems. They need to be able to look at a medical record, be able to read it, be proactive and open up a medical record and say, oh, this dog's due for heartworm testing or is out of preventative. I need to, you know, get a refill. You know, I need to call the client and tell the client. Let me go call them and do that and feel like they're able to solve clients' problems. And they're able to, you know, when the kennel area is calm and there's not a lot going on in that area, they can come up front and start assisting in exam rooms and in the treatment area and be able to do that. So I totally agree that we underutilize our kennel staff. And that's why you have weekly meetings. You bring everyone in, and they're getting the same information. All of the knowledge is being shared to all of the team members, so that you can increase how much you utilize them and how much you empower them in the practice. It's a powerful, powerful thing when the knowledge is being shared to everyone on the team. And sometimes I go into practices and you've got just a core group of people that have all the knowledge, and then you have all the masses that don't know anything and the information is not being shared to the masses. And you wonder why you have turnover. And it's because you're not sharing the information with them. They don't feel like this is a career opportunity for them. They're not being challenged. They're not growing. And this is an opportunity to get them excited about veterinary medicine and get them excited about their role in the practice. The other issue is, you know, incorporate your vendors. You know, utilize Pfizer. Utilize Fort Dodge, Mariel, Hills Pet Nutrition. You know, bring them in and let them do some training on pain medication. And, you know, when you're deciding on what your, you know, heartworm preventative standard is going to be. Bring them in, let them provide lunch, let them educate you about their product, and then the next week bring the next vendor in, and then you decide, okay, what's going to be our heartworm preventative standards in our practice? What's going to be our pain management standards? And utilize your vendors to help with some of that medical training. They're not going to come in and take up your whole 2 to 3 hours. They're just going to come in on that medical training section. And then lastly, make it fun. You can make this fun. It doesn't need to be, you know, just rote, you know, read manual, you know, line item by line item. Make it fun. You know, you can play games. You can play Trivial Pursuit, you can play Family Feud, you can do all different types of things to where you can make learning fun and interactive. It doesn't have to be boring. And so there's all kinds of tools out there on how to motivate your employees and motivational games and things. Go and get some of those resources so that it can be fun for your healthcare team. Food is always fun. Chocolate is always fun. Giving away prizes. Always fun. When people, you know, get something, you know, even if it's just, you know, lottery tickets or something, you know, you can really make it fun for your team. Yes. They've jumped on board. So she's creating an incentive on how to, you know, on increasing client compliance, and if they meet the goal, then they get to have a group party. And you got to decide what motivates your people. Everybody is motivated differently based on, you know, where you are in the country. I mean, people are here from all over the country, and, you know, there's different things that motivate your specific team. But, you need to know, as a leader, you need to know your team. You need to know what's going to motivate them and what's going to push their buttons to get excited about coming to these meetings. But they can be inspiring, not only because they're learning and they're being challenged, but you can do some fun things like chocolate and prizes and games and food that make it exciting and fun. Questions? Comments? You guys have been just an incredible audience. I appreciate you so much. If you have any questions or comments, don't hesitate to come up and ask me or send me an email. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you guys so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed the day with you.